Hey everybody, it's Britt, lead pastor at Sunridge. Welcome back to our teaching podcast. You know, we are on a mission here at Sunridge to help people find and follow Jesus. We believe in the good news that Jesus welcomes all, regardless of how far you feel from God. That means we're a great starting point to explore Christianity or to sink your spiritual roots deep as a devoted Jesus follower. If you'd like to know more about us, just check out our website at sunridgechurch.org. And of course, we'd love to have you drop in anytime for a visit to learn and worship along with us. And now, here's our teaching for this week.
So good morning, everybody, whether you're joining us online or right here on our campus. Just want to say welcome to Sunridge. And I just want to double down on something Jed mentioned. Today we have our welcome luncheon. So if you're new or newer, we would love to meet you. We provide food. And you know, it's just a hangout time, and we'll tell you a little bit about our church. It doesn't go on and on. It might be 30 or 40 minutes, so you have plenty of time to get out and do all the other things that you want to do. But it's a chance for us to meet you, you can meet our staff and some of our elders and get to know our church just a little better. So love to see you there. They say a picture is worth a thousand words. I'm sure you've heard that saying, and if that's true, then a word picture, in this case a metaphor we're going to see today, is worth a thousand sermons. A shepherd tending his sheep was a common sight in the first century in Judea. But unlike farmers like today in Europe who raise sheep for food, the Judeans in the first century, they raised sheep for their wool. And so that meant that their profit model was based on the sheep having a long and healthy life, and so that they could have repeat business from their sheep and their thick fleece. So they had this long relationship with their flocks. The shepherd knew the sheep knew their shepherd, and often then a shepherd would even name his sheep individually and could call them independently. And did you know that a sheep can recognize their individual shepherd's voice? And I found this clip I'm going to show you how discriminating the sheep can be, and this shepherd is demonstrating how his flock will only listen to his voice. This is great. Watch it on the screens.
One more time.
Was that cool or what?
You will never have the same again.
Isn't that great? I love that. His sheep follow him because they know his voice. We're in a study today, we're continuing study of the Gospel of John, and today we're going to be looking at chapter 10. And so we're going to go through the chapter, and we're going to see how Jesus compares his relationship to his followers, like that of a shepherd with his flock. And then we're going to see in the text, and also do a contrast of how the nature of the relationship of the religious leaders, the Pharisees, how different their relationship is with the people. And then we're going to wrap it all up by making some connections for you and me in this 2025 in the Temecula Valley. So first, let's do an overview. And this first section in chapter 10, verses 1 through 21, I'm calling of shepherds versus thieves and hired hands. As Denise just read, Jesus is drawing this contrast between himself and the religious leaders, the Pharisees, by pointing out this common occurrence in the first century, the sight of shepherds with their flock. And in the passage, Jesus contrasts his shepherding with three individuals that the sheep can be exposed to. So first of all, in verse 2, you have the shepherd. The one who enters by the gate is the shepherd of the sheep. And then you have thieves and robbers, which there's a distinction there. A thief is like the sneaky kind, and the robber is kind of like, just think, you know, armed robbery. In verse 1, very truly, you Pharisees, I tell you Pharisees, anyone who does not enter the sheep pen by the gate but climbs in by some other way is a thief and a robber. And then a little later in the passage, he talks about hired hands. Verse 12, the hired hand is not the shepherd and does not own the sheep. So what's this all about? Shepherds during this time worked cooperatively with one another, and especially in the way they protected the sheep as they bedded them down at night. And if they were close to a developed community, they would have these pens and they could put them in there within the confines of the fencing, right? But often they were far outside any town and they would have to get creative in how they would keep their flocks safe at night. And one way was to utilize like a natural barrier found in the topography. Here, I'm going to put an example up on the screen, and you can see that there's a cave here in this location, but the shepherds had built this rock wall to enlarge the area, but you see that they left a gap there. That's the access point. And they would herd their sheep at night into this protected enclosed space, and then a shepherd would guard the opening. So that gate is the authorized access point. But thieves and robbers and sometimes even predators could try to get to the sheep by sneaking over the wall. Jesus here identifies himself as the shepherd. In fact, he calls himself, in verse 11, he says, I am the good shepherd. And he says the good shepherd in verse 3, calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. And this is also interesting. Jesus says, when he has brought out all his own, he goes on ahead of them and his sheep follow him because they know his voice. So today, if you see like some scene of sheep being herded, they're usually being like herded by an amazing dog, right? Those dogs are crazy. Or some farmer or rancher on a little motorcycle or something, and they're driving the sheep. But in the first century, these shepherds led their sheep with their voice. They led from the front. Jesus also refers to himself another way in verse 9. He says, I am the gate, and whoever enters through me will be saved. And so remember in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus spoke of entering into a relationship with God as coming through a narrow gate. And Jesus is that gate. It's a narrow gate of salvation, Jesus said. The shepherd's concern for the flock runs deep. In verse 11, Jesus says the shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. So we know that shepherds defend their sheep, and we know that's exactly what Jesus did. Lay down his life. But there's another image that Jesus draws upon here by mashing together this notion of the shepherd and the gate. The shepherd would literally lay down in the middle of the gate at night for the sheep's protection. And so in essence, he was saying, the only way you'll get to my sheep is over my dead body. And ironically, it's through Jesus' death that we gain a relationship with God. The sheep can be in mortal danger at any time from thieves and robbers. The thief has an entirely different vision for the sheep. Verse 10, the thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. That is, the thief has no concern for the flock's welfare. He only wants a quick profit. But the good shepherd, Jesus says, I have come that they may have life and have it to the full. To the full means not just to live, but to live abundantly. In fact, it means superabundance. So the good shepherd desires the very best for the sheep. But the threat doesn't just come from predatory behavior, like from thieves or robbers. It can also come from the inside, from a less apparent threat. Verse 12, the hired hand, which we mentioned, is not the shepherd and does not own the sheep. So when he sees the wolf coming, he abandons his sheep and runs away. So the hired hand has literally no investment in the welfare of the sheep. They're just an income source for him. And he'll abandon the sheep anytime a serious threat appears. The contrast Jesus is exposing here isn't just some theoretical exercise that he's going through. He's exposing the corruption of the Pharisees. In verse 8, he says, all who have come before me are thieves and robbers. So in verses 1 through 18, Jesus is using this everyday image that the first century people would know and recognize, that of true shepherds of the sheep in contrast with thieves and hired hands. And in verse 19, John tells us the Jews who heard these words were again divided. That is, after Jesus got done saying this, they were confused. They were saying, like, well, what is the truth? And who can we trust? Which makes this next section really important in verses 22 through 30 of sheep and who they follow. A little context here. We're gonna nerd out a little bit, okay? On this day, Jesus is walking through Solomon's colonnade, or some of your versions might say the porch, Solomon's porch. And that was destroyed by the Romans in 70 AD. But Josephus tells us it was this enormous area, like 185 meters square, and it could hold 30 to 50,000 people. And it was used for a place of gathering or debate or worship. And Acts 5 tells us that early Christians of Jewish descent used to meet in this porch area. And Jesus now is walking through this part of the temple. And in verse 22, John tells us it was the festival of dedication. There's all these occurrences that are going on. Remember, we've been seeing that. And the festival of dedication is, now we call it Hanukkah. And Hanukkah is a celebration of when this small group of Jewish rebels called the Maccabees, they liberated the temple from the Greek Syrians. It was in the second century BC. That is, after this period that we studied, Ezra and Nehemiah, there's this intertestamental period. It's about 400 years before from the end of the Old Testament to the beginning of the New Testament. And during that period, the Jews are ruled by this brutal king. He outlawed all Jewish practices and study, and he forced Jews to eat pork. And he raided the temple treasury, and he profaned the temple by setting up an altar to Zeus, and he would sacrifice pigs there in the temple. And when the Jewish people protested that, he responded by slaughtering a bunch of them and then selling others off into slavery. And then Judas Maccabeus leads this revolt in 165 BC, and he succeeds in vanquishing this ruler, the emperor. And Jewish tradition says that when the Jews re-entered the temple after being freed, they wanted to worship, but they could only find enough olive oil to keep the menorah lit for one day. But miraculously, according to Jewish tradition, it lasted 8 days. And that's why when Hanukkah is celebrated, it lasts 8 days, and the menorah has 9 candles in it. I'm just going to put a picture up there. And that middle candle is used to light each day to represent the 8 days that the oil miraculously lasted. And another tradition that started, are you guys still with me? I get into this stuff. I'm sorry. If I'm boring you, just like hang with me. We'll get back there. But Another tradition associated with Hanukkah is the dreidel. Anybody seen these before? Okay. So because of the study of the Torah was outlawed during this period under the reign of this emperor, they had to continue their studies of Jewish law underground, so to speak. So what they would do is little groups of small children would gather with their teacher, and he would be teaching them about the Old Testament and the law. But when a soldier or other, you know, official came by, they would pretend like they were playing games, like with a dreidel. And interestingly, like those letters that are on the sides of the dreidel, they're an abbreviation for this statement: a great miracle happened there, which is referring to the oil in the temple. So you still with me? We're going to get back to the passage. Slap your neighbor, shake them, do something. Just put up with me. So it's in Solomon's colonnade that the Pharisees surround Jesus, and they're taunting him. And Jesus says to them in verse 26, "You do not believe because you are not my sheep. I'm the good shepherd sent by the Father." Verse 27, "My sheep listen to my voice. I know them, and they follow me." So this is really powerful. So don't miss it. Jesus is saying to these, the respected religious leaders, "You are not in my flock. You listen to another shepherd's voice." Whoa. And it makes me think, we're going to come up on a part here in this passage where it's like, you want to ask, like, how could that happen? And can someone be a Christian and then lose their salvation? People ask me that. And I always answer no. Now I qualify that by saying when I say no, I'm talking about somebody who has sincerely put their faith in Christ, not someone who lackadaisically said a prayer and never thought about God again and then disregarded any effort to follow Jesus. I'm talking about someone who's trying to follow Jesus, yet they stumble or they get lazy. They have things they've yet to completely surrender. In other words, they're far from perfect, and then they just start to think, am I really a Christian? And maybe you've prayed the prayer 100 times, "God, in case I didn't say it right, I'm saying it again. Jesus, save me. I'm sorry for my sin," or whatever your prayer was. There's another important evangelical doctrine that we believe. It's called eternal security. And I'm going to put it up on the screen, that eternal security is that those who have placed their faith in Jesus Christ are guaranteed eternal salvation. And this is, you might have heard this saying, once saved, always saved. We believe this because our relationship with God is not based on what we do, but what he did. Logically, if you did nothing to earn your salvation, then what could you possibly do to keep it? But then there's also, this is cool, what Jesus says about his sheep in verse 28. "I give them eternal life, and they shall never perish. No one will snatch them out of my hand. My Father who has given them to me is greater than all. No one can snatch them out of my Father's hand. And I and my Father are one." So here, answer these questions in your mind. Who gives eternal life? Jesus. What will happen to them? They will never perish. But what if, ... no one will snatch them out of my hand. And I and my Father are one. And I think it was my high school pastor that gave me this great visual of this passage. Think about it this way. When I become a Christian, I am in Jesus' hand. And he and the Father are one. So I'm also, God's placed his hand around that. Now, what in the world could break that bond? Right? Nothing. Well, all of this is too much for the religious leaders. Because especially when Jesus said, "I and my Father are one," this makes them totally lose their minds. And brings us to the last section of chapter 10, of those who throw stones. Verse 31, again, his Jewish opponents picked up stones to stone him. Remember, they've attempted to murder Jesus in the past. And Jesus asked them again, like he has similarly before, verse 32, I've shown you many good works from the Father. For which of these do you stone me? Jesus is pointing out the irony of this situation. You want to kill me because I do good things? And the chapter ends with Jesus kind of melting into the crowd and escaping to the place of his baptism. In verse 39, he says that they tried to seize him, but he escaped their grasp. So that was a lot, I know. We've covered a lot of ground, but I think that there are some nuggets in here for you and me. And maybe even when we were going through the passage, the Holy Spirit was pointing out things to you. It's like, hey, I see how that connects to my life today. So we're going to spend just a few minutes here talking about three things that I think we can take away. And I want us to think of this time in terms of through the lens of questions, okay? So question one is, and this is in your notes, can I distinguish between a shepherd, a thief, and a hired hand? Can I distinguish between a shepherd, a thief, and a hired hand? First off, there's this wonderful illustration or metaphor in this passage that talks about Jesus as the good shepherd. Now, good here means more than just morally good. We know that Jesus was perfect, but it can also include beautiful. And that's not referring to what Jesus looked like, but the beauty and the attractiveness of what the good shepherd does. And this contrasts what Jesus draws between his intentions for the flock and the thief and hired hand. It's subtle, but it's significant. It's important for us to note it here because they're all in the sheep business, right? But they have very different motives. The good shepherd seeks the ultimate good of the sheep. He wants them to have life to the full. He leads the sheep to green pastures where they can thrive. He puts himself and his life at risk for the sake of the sheep. He lays down his life because he loves the sheep more than he loves himself. On the other hand, there are these other characters, thieves and hired hands. A sheep to them is just something to be cashed in on. The hired hand may initially have a friendly disposition toward the flock. He looks the part until a crisis arrives, and then he'll cut and run. They all interact with the sheep, but some of them don't care about the sheep. The sheep represent profit and gain and influence. So their relationship is transactional with the sheep. And the moment the sheep can no longer provide what they want, they'll abandon the sheep. And here's the scary part. They look the part. Remember, Jesus is talking about the Pharisees, and they have all these religious credentials. They talk the talk, and that's why Jesus warned in the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 7:15, watch out for false prophets. They come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ferocious wolves. In other words, their disguise is going to look authentic. They may even look like a sheep. They may sound like a shepherd. They may speak sheep. They may be dressed as a shepherd. You know, I don't know where, someone either told me this or I read it online, which would make it true for sure. I heard that coyotes have learned to wag their tails like domestic dogs now. And they're like tricking people's pets, and they act like a friendly dog. They send one out, and then like Fido comes out there, hey, a new guy. And then all the buddies grab him and Fido's gone, you know. So that's kind of the picture here. And I know that I say, well, how can I tell the difference? And in this Matthew passage, Jesus goes on after warning us about the ferocious wolves that don't look it. In verse 16, he says, by their fruit, you will recognize them. That is, The tell is their fruit, their life. What are they like as human beings? Do their lives reflect the values that they say they embrace? Do they really care about the sheep? Or are they motivated by something else? So how can I tell the difference between a good shepherd and a thief or a hired hand? A shepherd reflects the goodness of Jesus in their life, their words, and their character. So that brings us to the next question, question two. Am I listening to the right voice? Am I listening to the right voice? Contrary to the popular myth, sheep are not dumb. Actually, they're rather intelligent creatures. They have good memories, and they can remember faces for years. They form strong bonds with other sheep, and they'll defend each other the best that they can. And they're capable of experiencing a wide range of emotions. They can experience fear, joy, anger, and grief. But they are dependent. They're defenseless, which is why they require a shepherd to survive. They must be led to food and protected from predators. You know, wild animals chew their cud with their heads up, vigilant to threats. But domestic animals, like sheep, they graze and they chew with their heads down. That's why they need a shepherd. So little Bo Peep was wrong. You can't leave them alone and they'll come home wagging their tails behind them. Because if they follow the wrong shepherd, they will fall into danger. Which is why it's so important that the sheep know the true shepherd's voice, answer only his call, respond only to his commands. As Jesus warned, verse 27, my sheep listen to my voice, I know them and they follow me. And you guys, today there are so many voices calling to us. This pastor says one thing, another pastor says another. This Christian leader says do this, this Christian leader says do that. And our ears are constantly assaulted by radio and TV and internet and YouTube and social media. And we have to ask, what voices are we listening to? And I think the most salient application of what Jesus said here is that you have to see that Jesus is warning about these people who are supposedly religious, the Pharisees, they're leaders, they're admired, they're listened to, they're followed. And he says to these respected leaders with substantial followings, you are not my sheep. You don't listen to my voice. So a sheep is in mortal danger if they follow the wrong shepherd. And you know, a lot of people followed the Pharisees in Jesus' day. And you say, well, that's scary. What are we supposed to do? I've been told that one of the things that FBI agents do in their training is they have to learn how to recognize counterfeit bills. And so part of their training is that they hold real money. They work with real money, real authentic dollars, so that they learn to tell the difference after handling the real thing so much. Just like a false prophet can be identified by their fruit, we can avoid following the wrong voices if we know the true shepherd's voice, if we are intimately familiar with Jesus. And this is one of the reasons why we're studying the Gospel of John, because this is so formative to who we're becoming as Jesus followers today. We're all being shaped constantly. We're all being formed and changed. And the question is, by whom are we being changed? If we constantly expose ourselves to the words of Jesus, the red letters, if we attune our ears to hear Jesus' voice, we'll be able to cut through the baloney that we're all constantly assaulted with, whether it comes from thieves or robbers or hired hands or predators, we will know the Good Shepherd's voice. Last, does my religion make me want to throw rocks? Does my religion make me want to throw rocks? And that might be one of the most defining determinations of what shepherd's voice we're listening to. The Pharisees, they had allowed the purity of Judaism to be contaminated with their own self-will, their greed, their lust for power, their accolades, so that over time, they became misshapen. And so obviously, like priests, like people, they're creating misshaped people. And their religion twisted them into these self-righteous snobs so that they were so misshapen that when they met the real Jesus, verse 31, they picked up stones to stone him. There's something dark about religion when it goes wrong, because it transforms us from the gardeners that God intended us to be. Remember Adam and Eve? He told them to tend the garden. But when we grow misshapen, we go from being cultivators of God's kingdom to becoming stone throwers. And rocks hurt. And rocks block access. It's a lot easier to throw rocks than it is to remove them to allow good things to grow. So the question is, are the voices I'm listening to leading me to throw rocks or to throw myself into the yoke of Jesus, who came to love and serve? I want to wrap up by just talking about two examples that came to mind when I was preparing this message of, like, for me, what epitomizes someone who's cultivating in the world and not rock throwing. First of all, there's DJ Schutz, who in 1993, after taking his high school group to serve at an orphanage down in Baja, Mexico, he decided to leave his very successful California business to lead Door of Faith Orphanage, DOFO, as it's called. And in the last 25 years, DOFO has become one of the largest homes in Baja. And they typically have over 100 kids there. And it's the happiest orphanage you've ever been to. We support them through our missions budget. You're giving, we support DOFO. We've been down there several times. What a beautiful picture of what it means to cultivate in the world when there's poverty and caring for the people who are the most vulnerable. There's another one. You guys remember the pandemic? Remember, like, how it was? Like, so during the pandemic, you know, schools shut down, right? There was a teacher, Stacy Scott Stewart. Here's a picture of her in her car. She organized over 50 Indiana teachers to drive by students' homes on their birthdays to show their students the needed love and support. So regardless of what you think, like, about how the pandemic was handled, that's not what this is about. I want you to see that Stacy decided to cultivate something with those children. And she said this: before I knew it, people were making signs and going over the top like elementary school teachers do. And she said, when she was putting together the event, she said, "We just want all the kids to be connected to their teachers because we're all in this together." I love that story because there are many other responses at that time. Some may be appropriate. I'm not here to argue that, but, like, she decided to cultivate. I'm going to ask the band to come up. And in closing, I just want to say, if I know the Good Shepherd, if my ears are attuned to his voice above all others, I will become someone who removes stones and clears the way for life-giving things to be cultivated. Because the Good Shepherd leads us to cultivate and to invite and to serve and to love. And I know that if I were to ask you today, like, how many of you are glad the Good Shepherd found you and called you by name, and you recognized his voice, you would say, "I'm so glad the Good Shepherd found me." If you're, like, just exploring Christianity, and you're hearing some of this for the first time, I want you to think about that this picture that Jesus is drawing from everyday life is telling us who God is and how he thinks about people. And we learn from this that he leads us because he goes ahead of us. And he calls us by name. And he cautions us to make sure we're listening to the right voice, to know his voice. And his utmost desire for us is to see us thrive. We are in his hands. He laid down his life for us, and he will never abandon us. That's the Good Shepherd. Let's stand and worship.
Hey, everybody, it's Britt again. Thanks for listening. If you need something, if you have a question, or you'd just like us to pray for you, you can reach us through email, info@sunridgechurch.org. We hope you'll listen in again next week, but in the meantime, keep helping people find and follow Jesus.